propaganda. Irish sailor.
Beady, beady, beady.
Copacetic, he used. He used the word copacetic. I was so happy.
His vocabulary is increasing.
Yeah.
With every episode. Just like me and Geek Brunch Retrocast.
So how are you doing this morning?
Pretty good. I adjusted my microphone relative to my mouth because... normally, I try to chew on it, apparently.
Chew on it?
Not really, but I listened to the first 5-10 minutes of last episode, and you can hear me breathing a lot.
Oh.
So, apologize to the listeners for that. Thanks for tolerating it, and hopefully this time it won't be as much of an issue.
I didn't notice it. Maybe it's just because I'm used to hearing you.
Maybe. You're just used to me breathing in your ear.
Like Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Well, we're always congested in the morning, both of us. So I apologize, too.
Yeah, that I realize I can only do so much about. Positioning the microphone's not going to help too much with that.
Yeah.
People that listen to the show have probably long tuned out our post-nasal drips. Geek brunch allergies.
That's right.
But, yeah, I mean, it was kind of a weird week, especially weather-wise.
Yeah.
I think Monday or someday beginning in the week, there was a high of 50. And then I think it was actually Tuesday. And then the very next day we had a blizzard and I didn't go to work. It was that bad. And then on Friday
it was... Do you have the ability to work from home or no?
No, they're supposed to be setting me up at some point to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not yet there. So hopefully it won't be an issue. Definitely by next winter, but most likely much sooner than that. But yeah, so I had to use some time for that, but better than getting stuck in snow on the thruway or something.
Yeah.
But, and then Friday it was 50 degrees again. And today it's like 20.
That's kind of what we go through. Like yesterday was really, really cold. And we even had snow flurries. And then today it's up back up to the 50s. And then tomorrow I think it's going to get cold again. And then we're going to heat back up. I don't know. It's very weird.
Yeah, the weather's been really weird. And then the other funny thing this week was, you know, obviously I have my days where I'm tired at work. You know, I might, in the afternoon, if I have a big lunch, feel a little sleepy, have a little trouble.
Even with the bird stuff you eat?
Yeah.
The bird food?
It's all about quantity, you know? You can still fill your shelf up pretty good. So, you know, eat a lot of beans or something.
That'll give you gas.
Yeah. But so I'll have my days where I'm sleepy for whatever reason and get a little sleepy at work, maybe not off for a second. But lately, I've really fallen asleep, like straight up, almost smack my head on the keyboard.
It's that bad?
Well, recently it had been like this week. I'm wondering, like, what the hell's going on? It's usually not this bad. I'm usually not seriously struggling to stay awake, even at the end of the day, you know, and I know I'm going to be going home soon. And I was like Thursday, I think it was, I was trying to finish up a couple things before I left. And I knew I couldn't leave without doing that. And that's all I had to do. And it was only going to take a couple minutes, but it took me twice as long because I kept falling asleep.
Oh, jeez.
I'm like, what the hell's going on? And on top of it, I'm not someone that gets headaches that often. Every once in a while, if I'm doing something really intensive mentally, and I'm really concentrating and not, you know, not shifting my focus at all, I might get a headache if it's a long day, but I don't get headaches a lot. And I was getting headaches more frequently. Like, yeah, what the hell is going on? Like, am I, you know, narcoleptic with a brain tumor or something?
Yeah.
And, not that I really thought that, but, so Friday morning, I'm going to make my coffee and I look at the bag. It's from, and my coffee is normally from Target.
Yeah.
And I look at the bag and it looks exactly like the normal coffee, but right above the type of coffee that it is, it says decaffeinated. So for at least a week, if not more.
It would make it that much of a difference switching like that?
Yeah, considering I went just cold turkey.
But how much coffee do you drink a day?
I think I would, like, it depends on how you want to measure it. Like, the, I usually fill the coffee pot up to about, like, the 8 line.
Yeah.
And that usually works out to maybe, like, 3 or 4 decent mugs full.
But do you take, is that at work?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really drink stuff after, I start drinking it in the morning, and I don't usually, I'm usually had all my coffee by noon. I don't drink coffee or any caffeine at night or anything like that.
The caffeine definitely could see the headaches, though.
Yeah, that's
totally what it is, because when you go cold turkey, you get headaches. I mean, wicked.
Yeah.
I've had that before, but yep. I haven't had I'll get groggy when I went off caffeine, but I won't get like where I'll pass out.
Yeah. I mean, it's a combination of things, but yeah. So it's kind of funny. Like, oh man. So that bag was close to being done. So I tossed the rest of it. And thankfully the next bag that I had in the cupboard was real coffee. So I had some of that and I only drank half of what I normally did, 'cause I was pretty buzzed. I was trying not to, like, at work, I'm fairly quiet. I don't talk a lot or anything, but my demeanor at home, just around Kara and stuff, I'm pretty silly, and I'm all making up songs and singing, making jokes and stuff like that. And I was having a hard time containing myself at work. I wanted to just act silly.
Wow. The effects of caffeine. Going cold turkey and not realizing it.
yeah. So
you bought that totally by accident.
It. Yeah. We don't know if I did or Kara bought it, but I mean, even if she was the one that bought it, I can't blame her, because I looked at it every morning for at least a week and didn't notice either. It's not, I mean, like I said, the bag looks exactly the same, but it just, and the word decaffeinated isn't the most prominent thing on the front of it, so it was pretty amusing.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So that mystery is solved. A couple people said to me, well, you've gone through the withdrawal, are you just gonna, you could stop drinking coffee if you wanted them. Like, yeah, I could, but I like it.
Well, you probably needed another couple weeks to
possibly
to, yeah,
but it could be worse. I don't smoke or anything like that, and I don't have a lot of sugar, so I like my coffee and my beer. Not at the same time.
Yeah. Maybe that's the key. Maybe that's euphoria.
Yeah, maybe. I have had beer with coffee in it, so. Yeah, I should just get that for the mornings.
The beer?
Yeah, beer with coffee in it. A little Sunday morning come down.
Nice. So did you do anything on Tuesday when you were snowed in?
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of hung out. Kara actually was soft too, because the place where she works is closed. So so she was around and just kind of hung out and, you know, did a few little things, but there's only so much you can do, you know?
Right. You could read comics.
You can't go anywhere. That is one thing I did. I did read a few, I think. That's one thing that's nice. If I get stuck in the house, I got plenty to read.
Right.
Don't have to worry about that. So, in fact, I sometimes wonder, you know, I feel like I have so many comics that I haven't read. I got some more this week. I know you did some shopping too, right? You had some stuff coming in the mail.
Yeah, I got a lot of Conan. I got some covers that I just saw, you know, just ran across. It's bad to follow, like, the Bronze Age 70s comic book web Facebook page and back issue, because every now and then I run across a cover that just sucks me in. Like, I'm like, that cover is amazing. And then I go on eBay, and that's the downfall, because then I try to find that book for the cheapest I can get it, and then... And then while I'm there, I find some other stuff.
Yeah.
So I was very happy. I'm a big Red Sonja fan. Like, and I did get her first appearance, which is in 23 of Conan the Barbarian, but it's not a full appearance. It's just like, it's kind of like the Venom thing, kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I bought 24, which has her full appearance. So I was happy to get those, and I got them at decent prices. And I got some other interesting things. I got the full run of Logan's Run. Was happy about that. I don't know why I never had it. I think I had a couple, and I just lost them someplace. But that number 6 has like the first full Thanos story, in other words, where he's not a supporting character or a villain. So have that. I got a lot of good stuff.
What triggered the got you thinking about Conan? Was it just random, or
I wanted the Red Sonja, and the way I got the Red Sonja, I could never win it. I've been trying for months. I would always get outbid by 24 cents at the last second. And I'm not there, like, at the very last second like some people are to hit the button or whatever. Usually it happens, you know, I'm at work still or whatever. I'm not at the terminal watching. I just put in what I'm willing to pay for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was this bundle of Conan books. It came with like 10 books, and the guy didn't advertise like first Red Sonja, which I think is hit bad on him, right?
Yeah.
But I knew the number. And I looked at the copy, and it was like very good to find. I mean, the book looks good. The binding looks like it's got a little bit of a roll in it. And I was like, you know what? That looks like a good bid. So I put a bid in for all the books. And some of them have some, like, amazing covers. So I'm glad I did. And I already own like Conan number 1 and 2. And I've still been trying for 3 and 4. I'm working my way up. But I always lose. And I won this bundle for like dirt cheap. It was like $20 for like... I think it was like 12 comics. And most of them were in fine or very fine condition, except for the one that I really, really wanted. But I was happy with it. And then the other one I just lucked out getting, because the book, you know, usually goes up to like $80. And this one I got pretty damn cheap. Sometimes you just luck out. Persistence.
Yeah, and I think...
Just be persistence and fighting the battle.
Never give up. And I think that points out a good tip for eBay too, with the bundles. Sometimes if you have the patience of just looking and browsing the comics on eBay, you can find some stuff that's where they're not listing the specific issues.
Yeah, and then there's look for people that don't know what they're selling and have a good rating. Because if you look for key appearances and people bundle them, they don't necessarily say, oh, first Red Sonja, you know what I mean? Because they don't pay attention. Yeah. They're just sending it by bundle, where the guy could have probably sold that one book for, I don't know, another $10 than I got the whole bundle for.
Yeah.
And just that one book, like if he listed it by itself. But that's bad on him.
Yeah, well, and I think there, you know, there are people out there who do a small business and flipping stuff on eBay, so they'll go to Goodwills and buy lots of stuff. And if they don't specialize in comics, if they sell a whole bunch of different kind of stuff, then they might not exactly know what they have, and they might just be looking to make more than they paid for it, you know? But they might, like you said, there might be circumstances where they could make even more and not realize it.
Right.
But,
and I think I got the first appearance of Elric in Conan, which is the guy that Keith just loves, Knutson, in issue 14 and 15. So this, I mean, the art is freaking amazing on this covers, and it's easy to get sucked into to the world if you're addictive like me, have a you know, personality like I do. But I do have, I still do have a an ADD of collection. Like, I don't ever stay focused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I tend to do that too.
Then we, there's like this new secondhand bookstore. I went to see my brother in Boulder, and they have just a bunch of dollar comics and 50-cent comics in this bookstore. But they're in order, and I found some gems. I found Marvel Premiere. I almost have a full run of it, and I was missing the one issue with Dominique Fortune. And I'm missing two Doctor Who issues. And I've kind of been putting those off just because I don't care for Doctor Who. Like, I have the first Doctor Who, but I'm not dying to get the next two. Just to have a complete run. Because I am really not a Doctor Who fan. I mean,
yeah, I was going to say, as soon as you
God forbid, you know, I don't like I don't like Doctor Who because everybody's religious about it. But I don't like Doctor Who.
Yeah, that's why I don't even bring it up, because I know you hate Doctor Who. I've actually been, I was never a fan until the last couple of years, and I've actually been, it is relevant to the show though, because I've actually been, in addition to watching, you know, what people mostly talk about is the new show, but I've actually been going back to the beginning and watching Doctor Who from the beginning.
Yeah.
Which is an enormous undertaking, because I don't think there's more. Like, it's not the longest consecutive running show, but as far as the number of episodes, I think there's like 800 or 900.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So who knows when I'll lose interest, but I've actually been, I'm almost through 6 seasons, and the seasons starting out early on in the '60s were like 40 episodes long, like half hour episodes. So
I think I started watching it in the '70s because my dad was addicted to it.
Yeah.
Like PBS Doctor Who, right?
Right.
And I kind of was forced to watch it, and I grew a hatred for it. And then later on, when we started Geek Brunch with Heath Holland, loved Doctor Who. Like, I think he still does, like, love Doctor Who. And he got me to watch a few episodes of the modern day Doctor Who, and I absolutely hated it. and then a couple years later, my dad was visiting, and there was a BBC America Doctor Who marathon or something. They were showing it all day, and my dad just got sucked into it, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, and it was on all day, and I even hated it even more. But I don't hate that people love it. It's just not for me. I'm glad that people enjoy science fiction and that material.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's funny because I think for every fan that airing Doctor Who back in the day on BBC made, or I mean on PBS, I think there was just as many people turned off, because I didn't try it for years, because when I was flipping through the channels or when it would come on after, I don't know, whatever it showed up on, I'd be watching something on PBS, like maybe 3-2-1 Contact or something, I don't know.
I used to love that show.
Yeah. And
those are the things that I wanted to watch.
And I think it was pretty much the fourth actor that was Doctor Who, Tom Baker, that was on PBS, and it just looked weird to me. Like, it just seemed strange. I had no interest in it. And same thing with Kara. When I first started watching Doctor Who all the time, you know, she's like, I just noticed she had sort of a weird reaction, and like, is there an issue? Or she's like, well, it's not my most favorite of the things that you've become obsessed with. I'm like, why? She said, I don't know. I just have a negative association. She said, I think when I would see it on TV when I was a kid, and it would scare me, or it just seemed weird. So when I hear you watching it and I hear the theme song, it just weirds me out, but I think she's gotten used to it.
I think that's a lot of what I have.
Yeah.
Like a thing of the past, and it's just a negative. It's like Pavlov's dog. No, but not to that extreme. I wasn't tortured.
Right. No, but yeah, there's a negative association. I think she's got, maybe Barb needs to get into it and just repetitively watch episodes so you can't get away from the theme song, and then you'll just get conditioned to it, like Kara.
Barb did start watching it because, you know,
yeah,
a lot of our friends were telling her, you watch it.
Right.
And I'm like, Barb, you can watch it. I don't care. Yeah, I'll make some snide remarks. I can't help it, and that's not good. But she got into it for a little bit. Like, she watched, I think she watched like 3 episodes, and then she just vectored away from it. Like, there was some, there was a couple episodes she hated, and I think it just took her mind off of it, and she moved on to other things. Like, she stopped, stopped putting it on the TiVo, and went by the wayside.
I think also the fact that that's the nature of the show, that you might have somebody like Heath, or seemingly myself at this point, where you get into the whole show regardless. And I think for some people, they might be affected by whoever, because the lead actor changes every few seasons. You know, you might like a particular doctor, but then you might be turned off by other ones, you know?
Right.
People have favorites, but I could see how there might be some people out there who just don't even like the show anymore if they don't take to a particular actor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely unique in a number of ways.
Right.
But anyways.
And I bought a lot of issues of Ghost from Dark Horse.
Oh, cool. Like the original?
From 50 Cent, because I've been reading it digitally and I liked it. And That I picked up. I picked a full run of Nighthawk, which he's one of my favorite defenders. I guess he had a mini series in the 90s or 2000s, and I didn't buy it.
Mm.
And then I found some Shadow books from, you know how I really like the pulp? Shadow and Doc Savage from Dark Horse that I didn't even know existed. That was pretty cool. And then a Buck Rogers I found.
Oh, cool.
Which is one of... It's hard to tell what issue it is because it's still in its bag, and these Whitman never had the damn issue number. I hate that.
Mm.
But yeah, it was a good trip. And then I found like an omnibus of Kurt Busiek's Untold Tales of Spider-Man, which was the 99-cent jobber that Marvel did in the 90s.
Oh, right.
And I got the omnibus for like $35. Which is a $125 book or something like that. So that was a really good pickup.
Sweet. Yeah, I've talked before about the bookstore near where I work, and how for a while they were having 2-for-$1 comics.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went back to $1, so I stopped shopping. But then I think that they're trying to clear out space for like to bring in some new stock or something because they put them on sale for $3 for $1.
Right.
So I went back in there and grabbed some stuff that I had sort of passed over when it was 50 cents a piece. Mostly what I got was a crap ton of New Mutants issues that I knew were there.
Right.
And I didn't have a single issue of that. I've read some of them before. However, I didn't have any. So I actually got close to half of the run. Not in sequential, though. There is a run in the sort of in the middle of the pack. But I got almost 50 issues of that. And then that was the biggest chunk of it. I got an issue of Secret Origins with Uncle Sam and the Guardian. The first 11 issues of Power Pack.
That's one series I don't think I have one or two issues. Never read that.
They had some more issues of it. It's not like New Mutants where I grabbed all the ones I saw. I just grabbed the first 11 because they did have all those in sequence, and I didn't grab some of the later ones. But I got another issue of New Warriors, a couple issues of Quasar.
I want to get a full run of that eventually.
Yeah, I'm actually going to talk about the first issue. I think I read some of that when I was younger, and it was really good.
Never a space guy, but there one time we were just doing a vacation, and I knew I didn't want to buy comics that I already was getting in my pull list or whatever as a kid. So, yeah, I got like a copy of King Conan and, shit that I don't usually read. And Quasar, and it was Grenwald on that Quasar, and I picked up like two issues, and I was like, this is pretty freaking good.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why I read it when I was a kid. I think I just happened to get an issue maybe in a pack or something and liked it. And I can't really remember how many issues of it I read, but... or I might have recognized them from the Avengers or something, but so yeah, I got those, and I got Fred Hembeck Destroys the Marvel Universe, and the other one, like Saves or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I got was about like 6 or 7 issues of the New Defenders from like the 130s around there. They're all around that
Iceman issue. And the Angel and Beast.
Yeah. So.
And Cloud. I remember that. That was a weird character. It was half male. I mean, a male female type character that would always be around and just have a cloud around the genitalia.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Gargoyle. I love the Defenders. As a matter of fact, that's another thing I've been picking at is like Marvel team up with like Nighthawk and Valkyrie and, just getting the Defenders issues.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's why I grabbed them because I'm pretty unfamiliar with the Defenders, but I have a feeling that I would be pretty into them. So.
They're weird.
Yeah.
And I think part of why I love them is it was one of my first team books I've ever read ever. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of blown away, and it always holds a special place in my heart. Plus some of the storylines by Gerber were so damn sophisticated for the time.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was like ahead of his time. He was a man out of time.
I think I'll like him for that reason, that they're kind of strange.
Yeah. I finished my Starfire run, which was like this futuristic woman in the DCU when they had that explosion of the warlord and all the weird stuff. You know, the sci-fi genre and the fantasy genre. She was a character that came out of it. Had a very cool costume, very 70s, very Buck Rogers-ish, where you could see your thighs. I like.
Yeah, actually, I think I saw an issue of that because I'm only really familiar with the Teen Titans Starfire. I think I saw an issue of that when I was flipping through, like, oh, that's interesting. But I kind of exhausted the DC stuff that was there previously, and man, there was a dude that was there, was going through the DC stuff, and he had a huge pile of comics. He was into it.
Yeah.
It wasn't you. I looked. I double checked.
Yeah. A matter of fact, Barb has this running joke. Like, she checks in the mail and there's always something there.
Yeah.
I think there was one day that I didn't get anything, but I've cooled down. I got to stop for a while and read some of this stuff. I got to stay away from the eBay for a while.
Yeah, it can be. You can get it. It's an easy habit to get into. That's yep. For sure.
I'll be covering one book I picked up, which is the first appearance of a team in this episode.
Cool. Did you? What do you want to start with? We do have a question,
let's start with the question, and then we'll get in. And then we had feedback on our last Buck Rogers, which I thought was interesting. We may want to mention.
Oh yeah, yeah, we should. So we can do questions and feedback, and then
yeah. So you want to find the question, or
yep. All right. So it says. This is from Norbert Franz, and it says, well, it's like a two-part question. So first one part is, would you let your wives and girlfriends, so all of, this would be in reference to all of our wives and girlfriends, co-host an episode of the podcast with you? My answer for that is I would let my wives, but not my girlfriends. my fiance, who clearly does not listen to this podcast after my answer there. I would.
If she had interest.
And I've joked about it, like yesterday I said, did you read all your comics for the podcast tomorrow? You're our guest host. But I joke about it because she has no interest in her voice being recorded.
Ah,
that kind of it weirds her out. So, and I guess that it's an idea you get used to, but I think maybe it's a harder step for some people to take. So I would never say never, but she has no interest right now. But yeah, I'd be totally fine with it if she wanted to.
Yeah, same here. I'd be fine with it. Matter of fact, me and Barb did a podcast which you could still find called Rocky Mountain Comic Book Noise. But when we talked, it was more about the TV and the media than it was comics, because she dips her toes into comics with Vertigo. But like, she loved DMZ and she loves Fables and any kind of Fable type related book, and Why the Last Man. But if it's not that, that she pretty much has no interest. She'd rather read a book.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the TV goes, it's mostly current stuff. But she's always invited if she wants. She's been on a couple episodes of Geek Brunch when they start talking about some show. Bill will start talking about it, and it's a show that they love that she'll, mm-hmm. she'll come on and talk about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, she has less hesitation about being recorded, it seems, because I've definitely heard her on Geek Brunch here and there. Occasionally.
So you can hear her screaming in the background half the time.
Yeah.
She's watching sports.
And like the types of comic books that you mentioned, Kara does read stuff of that nature too. And we might actually be doing something in a written format, where we'll have a conversation, which actually will be recorded, but just roughly, and then I'll transcribe it for the Critical Masses Media.com website that I'm part of. But we just have to get around to doing it. We both read something that would probably be the first one, which is what's it called? It's by the guy that did American Born Chinese. They're two related books, Boxers and Saints.
Oh, okay.
So those are pretty cool. They deal with like two different perspectives on the, the Boxer Rebellion in Chinese history. Mm-hmm. It was pretty cool. So the second part of the question is also, did you ever get into, quote, relationship trouble, unquote, for doing too much podcasting? I think that one's more directed at you.
No, never. There was even a time where I was considering quitting, and Barb convinced me to stay with it. So she's a trooper.
Yeah,
I mean, sure. She's never ever stopped me from doing stuff that I love ever. But our relationship goes back to high school, so we were friends before we were, you know, together. So she knows me like. I've never changed. I've never grown up. She thought she was going to marry a man, but I stayed a boy.
Yeah. I mean, Karen and I haven't been together nearly as long, but she's always been, I mean, supportive of this show. We weren't doing the show, obviously, when she and I first were together, but... once we got started, she knows that it's something I really look forward to and enjoy. And, you know, it's a good thing for me to have the opportunity to do, to talk about stuff that I'm interested in. So never have had it, had any issues.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think
if you did four of them, you might.
Yeah, or
you are doing two, but when you do a solo podcast, it's a lot easier because you could do it at a time where any time you could do it at midnight if you want. I
mean, yeah, it's kind of like, and with that, on the latest one that I put out, I kind of have an idea going forward because, you know, we were talking about last time. Towards the end of the show, that the most important thing is that you're having fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking probably with the format of myth making, et cetera, I might just make it a monthly show where I talk to random different people in the podcasting comic book community. Still maybe about old comics, where maybe we'll both read the same thing ahead of time, but I'll just schedule a different person each month, I think that'll be a nice motivating factor to get to talk to different people.
Well, when it's your own show too, you could do whatever you want. You can morph it into what you want or what you're into.
Exactly.
The flexibility of what you're into. If you want to talk about Sanford and Son for a couple episodes, you can.
Yeah. I guess it's just a balance, trying to find the balance between doing that and also having at least a few listeners.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that might be fun just to get a chance to talk to different people. And so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, and when I told her that idea, you know, she was supportive of it. So it's kind of just finding the balance between what works and what's not, if it's not going to get in the way of our relationship or... make too much conflict with like our plans and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I was constantly podcasting and wasn't making any time for us to do stuff together, then that would be an issue, but I wouldn't want to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So that would be the sign of a larger issue. You know, it's, if you'd rather podcast all the time than spend time with your significant other, you know.
Yeah, that's like, that's not good.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you do a lot of podcasting, but it's because you're able to do that and also still spend time with Barb. So
yeah,
so,
and she's here in spirit. I can see here when I'm podcasting.
Right.
except for this one. Usually she's in bed. But
yeah, because it's earlier there, yeah.
She stays up late, man. She's got, like, wicked stamina where she could get... She sleeps good. Like, I'm a light sleeper. Like, I wake up, like, 5-6 times a night. She sleeps, and she just needs 5 hours of sleep. But when she crashes, she's gone. So it's like quality of sleep versus quantity.
Yeah.
And she stays up late.
Yeah.
Even on work days.
Yeah, I don't really on work days. I used to be much more of a night owl, and I'll occasionally get some Fridays, you know, I'll be wiped out from the week this Friday because it's the first day I had caffeine, and over a week I was up pretty late.
So the other feedback we got was from David Levine. He said, thank you for the shout out, and he talks about the plot to kill a city. And the one thing that he mentioned about that was really interesting that I did not pay attention to, he talked about Easter eggs relating to DC. And he talked about two specific ones and announcements on the speakers that were like arriving passenger Dr. Adam Strange from Alpha Centauri, please report to. That was an interesting one. And then later on, there's a flight 843 from Thanagar arriving. That is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is.
Also a great attention to detail to be able to pick that up, because usually those PA things are in the background. Like for me, I'm usually focused on the foreground and not paying attention to the background.
Right.
And unless I'm really looking for it, and that's pretty cool that he picked those up.
Yeah, definitely. I totally miss that. Yeah, I have a bad habit of doing multiple things at once. So I'm probably not paying close enough attention to catch stuff like that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So,
Avengers or comics?
Well, if we were in the habit of making neat segues.
Buck Rogers.
But we're not. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead, and since you mentioned it, we'll cover Buck Rogers. It felt really weird to watch a 1 hour or less than 1 hour episode.
Yeah, it went by fast.
A lot of two-parters. It seemed really fast of an episode for me.
Yeah, it was quick. Let's see, what was the name of this one? You said it earlier, I think.
Return of the Fighting 69th.
Right. Yes, and the Fighting 69th, they're a bunch of close to retirement age pilots. But the episode opens with Buck and Wilma are engaging in a training exercise with a couple of young pilots, and they end up pursuing some other spaceships approaching an asteroid field
with a bunch of like rookies.
Yeah, and you know the rookies aren't really ready for it, and I believe it's Wilma she's the one that's actually encouraging them to participate, right?
Yeah, it is a weird episode because it has like a weird undertone or message about youth and age in it, which I think is very, I don't know, it's pertinent to just real life, but she has these rookies. And on this mission in this asteroid belt, and they don't survive. I mean, they all die. And this is the first time I've ever seen Buck angry, and he was like yelling at Wilma.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, it's your fault that these kids are dead. We should have never took them on this. I told you.
Yeah, I mean, as they decide to continue to pursue the spaceships into the asteroid field really quickly, they hit one and are destroyed. And Buck basically blames her for sacrificing their lives, you know, in a way that he doesn't think was worth it. You know?
Yeah. That was Harley shaking.
Yeah, thought so. What's up, Harley?
Hey, Harley.
Holla. Yeah, I saw a picture. She was mad at you. You were getting into her space, sorting your comics. You're getting all up in her sleeping spot.
Yeah, she's a funny girl. She really is.
Yeah.
She's a creature of habit, too. Mm-hmm. Like, she slept downstairs, which is really weird, last night. But we went on our walk, and she was normal. She's grouchy. That's cool. So back to Buck Rogers.
Yes.
That was just a pause for the cause. Harley had to come in and hear a shake.
Make sure she's not forgotten about.
Yeah.
So the situation is that they find out that there's this group who are planning an attack. I forget how they discover this information, but this group has nerve gas that they're planning on using, and nerve gas at this point in the future is considered pretty primitive technology, but still has an effectiveness. Still has the same effectiveness, it seems. And so Dr. Huer comes up with this plan to reenact these veteran pilots. But unfortunately, one of them is a really good family friend of Wilma's, and who's known her since she was little. And she's the one that was actually, once she had grown up and come into a position of power, she was the one that was tasked with enforcing these health regulations that resulted in having to take their wings away, taking away their right to fly. So it's caused a little bit of awkwardness in their relationship.
They seemed pretty bitter about it too, like with a lot of sarcastic mm-hmm. remarks. All of them did, because it's almost like they were told they couldn't fly anymore when they felt they could.
Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously they can, because mm-hmm. they did a hell of a job in this episode.
Yeah, and I would say that they look like they're in maybe their late 50s, but apparently they're actually all close to 85. So,
yeah,
you know, health expectancy.
I don't know. They looked old to me. They look 60.
Yeah, that's true. I'm probably underestimating.
I mean, it was Peter Graves has been in many, many movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think I remember him from Airplane.
Oh, yeah.
Airplane 2. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. They don't look 85, but they probably look like they're in their 60s, mid 60s, yeah, or something like that.
Peter Graves played Major Noah Cooper, and then there was a couple of other guys. But you're right. They make it a point to show that age. Like Buck makes a remark, like, "Did you retire at 60?" And mm-hmm. they were like, "Retirement age is 90 or something like that." I don't know what they're saying.
Yeah, it was 85, which 85. They're close to being. But so they don't. I mean, Wilma technically is just enforcing the, like, she didn't come up with the rules, but
she enforced them, and it hurt their feelings more because she was little Diddy, or what do they call her?
Dizzy D.
Dizzy D.
Yeah, so he calls her Dizzy D, and that obviously raises Buck's eyebrows. Like, what's this Dizzy D business? And I guess so it was her father, right, that knew all these pilots?
Yeah.
And she would come around when she was little, and she had so much energy and was just so crazy as a child that that they would go dizzy trying to keep after her, and so they started calling her Dizzy D for her, you know, the D for her last name. So,
right.
So there's a kind of a neat history there. I mean, and some hurt feelings and stuff, and but
they do have they also have a history with the villain. I think like they they know who that guy is. This guy in the past was selling weapons to, you know, the enemy in other areas, and that's what caused them to go after him. Wilma Deering and them to go after them, and actually, I guess when they went after him last, it caused an explosion, which caused the guy's face to, you know, burn, and his wife, or I guess that's his wife, it also burned. I think she lost a hand, and she's got like this metallic hand, you know, it's made out of metal.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have a slave girl who's deaf, and she's a big part of the episode as well, because they're plotting to do this nerve gas totally for revenge. It's totally a vengeance thing, and that causes the Earth Directorate to use these older fighter pilots, and they're called Space Marines at the time, and they had these older ships, which awesome ships, man. Cool design. They're like it's a different type of ship. It looks wider, and it's got two pilot seats in the front, just like a regular airplane, and then it's got a turret in the back, like it kind of like in the Star Wars of the Millennium Falcon, you know, how they have that rotating chair.
They have
that turret in the back for defensive purposes, and these ships are like bombers. I mean, their whole purpose is to like fly in and drop bombs, and the turret is there for defense. I really like those ships. And I thought the special effects were not bad. I mean, they were pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so they're neat because they're futuristic from our standpoint, but like old-fashioned from their standpoint in the 25th century. And when you say that the female of the villains has a fake hand, It's interesting because it's definitely a sort of, speaking of retro futurism, it looks futuristic from a perspective at the time, but not so much now.
Yeah, it almost looks like a soldered.
Looks like something somebody whipped up in shop class or something, because she's got like copper tubing as her fingers.
Yeah, it looks terrible. There's some interesting moments though with the hand. Mm-hmm. One of the one is with the slave girl. When the slave girl makes a smile, she doesn't want the slave girl to have any kind of emotion or.
Yeah, I mean, they treat her like absolute shit.
Yeah, they treat her like shit, like a. It's worse than a pet. Mm-hmm. And she makes a smirk at one point, and the old bitch, I call her, she just looks really grouchy and bitchy the whole episode. She just grabs the slave girl's hand and just starts crushing it. But there's like a noise or something that distracts her. She might have crushed her hand, and yeah, she gets away. And then there's another interesting bit that we'll get to, where Buck does something with her hand I thought was really unusual. But there was a couple of Buck smirks in this one that I really liked. you know, where he's doing his wit thing, and I thought that was pretty cool. But anyway, reluctantly, the 69th, group are convinced that they're needed again, and they will go on this mission because Buck convinces them. They don't want to do what they're holding a grudge against Wilma, essentially. And they're like, we're too old. We don't have the peripheral vision. And he even makes it a point to like flick his hat onto the, you know, like, I don't have any peripheral vision. And he just flicks it and it lands right on the thing.
Yeah, without looking.
Without looking. He's like, I don't have any peripheral vision. And he does. But Buck being Buck, he's able to convince them to go on this mission, and they all go in, and who gets knocked out first? Wilma and Buck. So Buck is in the turret, and he's trying to defend it, and Wilma, they get shot at, and they like crash into the asteroid, and they're captured. And then the other part of the episode is, you know, the Major and crew, he's trying to convince them not to bomb yet because he wants to give them time to be rescued.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty cool.
Well,
it's pretty cool that the old guys are the ones that...
Yeah, totally. And one thing I was going to note about when they first... when Buck and Wilma first approach them about coming back into action, they... what's his name again?
Major?
Major.
Yeah. His name is Major Noah Cooper.
Right. When Major Cooper, when they approach him, you know, he has this exchange with Wilma, and it's awkward, and he's about to go play some cards with one of the other pilots. And so they follow after him, because they really don't have any, you know, well, Buck's persistent, and Wilma doesn't really have any choice, even though it's extremely awkward. They really need the help of these guys, and they follow him into the room, and it turns out that they're actually having a surprise party for Major Cooper. And so it's the group of them. There's four guys and a woman who's married to one of the pilots. And they at the end of the episode, the dog is hanging out with what's his face? Twiggy. So that was cool.
I lost you for about 3 seconds.
Oh, what was the last thing you heard?
You were talking about Major, the Major and them going to play cards, and then I think I lost you, and then the next sentence I got was like when you're talking about the dog.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I was just saying that there was four guys and a woman, and she's married to one of the... So in the group, there's a married couple. And they also... I just thought it was cool that they had a dog named Lucky and that he was their mascot. And at the end of the episode, Lucky is hanging out with Twiggy.
Yeah.
So, got to give the dog a mention. But
I don't know who the one guy is that was his Peter Graves' major... the Major's best friend. Like, there's that one guy...
Mm-hmm.
I liked him a lot because he had an annoying behavior when he was flying, and I tend to do that. Like if you're nervous or you're getting ready for something, you want to whistle or you might hum something. He was driving his co-pilot crazy because he was always whistling or humming.
Oh, right. So yeah, the old folk are forced to save the day, and actually they're having some difficulty getting the bombs to land. A couple of them miss, and then finally Major Cooper and his co-pilot, they're able to get one to land, but then so they're celebrating and everyone's excited that they were successful, and then they realize that Major Cooper isn't responding on the channel.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a pretty good job of convincing you they didn't make it.
It was kind of an awkward situation too, because what's his name came to greet him. What is his name?
Dr. Heuer.
Dr. Heuer came to greet him. And he was like celebrating, mm-hmm. and everybody had the drawn faces, and he just wouldn't let up with the celebration. Like, I got these awards for you. It's all party time, and everybody's like depressed.
Yeah, it definitely took him a minute there to realize what was going on. I was like, yeah, guys, that's awesome. You did a great job. Wait,
what happened?
Why are you all looking at me like that?
And so they do a really good job. You know, he's giving wings to the two guys, and And then over the loudspeaker, the major speaks, and he's like, it took us a while because we were blasted into the asteroid belt, but we're okay. And then it was like a, you know, celebrate time.
Yeah.
But so but before, okay. before Buck and Wilma are captured on that little asteroid or whatever it is, and you know, there's a couple fight scenes, and when they're captured, Buck actually kisses the metal hand of the woman. And she's like it kind of like changes her mood a little bit, because I think she considers herself like a monster, like don't look at my hand or don't look at my husband's face or, you know, that kind of thing. And Buck just kisses her hand like it's normal. And then he does a lot of witty remarks, because the bad guy says, have you ever been on fire? Have you experienced pain? And he's like, well, I've been to a dentist and they pulled my teeth out. But it's got that wit about it. And then they put him into a prison, you know, Wilma and Buck into the same cell. And Buck makes a couple of like witty smiles that just made me laugh when the guards are there standing there looking at him.
Oh, right. That's right. Because the deaf girl helps him escape from their imprisonment.
Right. Wilma Buck does knows the whole... sign language, so he can communicate with her.
Yeah, no one's really learned sign language because they didn't find it necessary. And the girl is from Earth, so she's really afraid for her family. And she has this little memory globe kind of thing where she can look at this glass globe and see an image of her parents. And eventually the evil bitch sees that she's looking at this thing and finds it and smashes it in front of her eyes. So when Wilma and Buck arrive, obviously she's quite willing, you know, to cooperate and to help Buck. And Buck definitely charms her, not in a creepy way, but just he's good with her as a young woman. You know, like you said, he knows sign language and he shows her sympathy that she's probably not had from anyone, especially since she's become a slave. And I forget the exact reason, but Wilma explains why no one really bothers to learn sign language anymore.
Oh, because they fix it when the child is born deaf.
Oh, right.
Like immediately.
Right.
They have medical procedures to add hearing to them. Like immediately. Which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think, you know, that's good that they have that technology. So there's no reason to learn sign language.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Buck had learned it for some reason that he states. So she signs to Buck when they're in the prison to distract the guard somehow. So Wilma, he communicates that to Wilma, and Wilma.
Oh, and she turns on the sex scene, though. That is awesome. She's like, she essentially suggests a gangbang with the three guards. Like, take you all on.
She says, yeah, I'm talking to all three of you.
I'm talking to all three of you. Let's get it on. And those guys are like so suckered. I'd be like drooling. I'd open the cage.
Be like, huh?
Be like,
what? That's awesome. All three of us?
All three of us? Are you talking to all three of us?
You like me? So, yeah, and it's really...
Buck is there egging him on. Yeah, she'll take you guys on.
Yeah, it's like, she means it.
She means it. That was hilarious. That was a good scene.
Yeah. But there's also... It really is a happy ending in a lot of ways, and Buck isn't around at the very, very end, and then he shows up, and he's been busy because they've brought the deaf girl. I feel bad that I'm not using her name, but back with them to Earth.
I think it's Alicia.
Okay,
I think.
So not only have they brought her back to her home planet, she's not a slave anymore. Buck walks in and has her parents with her. So her parents are still alive and they're reunited, and she's treated like such crap throughout the episode. So
it's kind of a rewarding scene.
Yeah, I was pretty happy to see her have a happy ending.
And then there's some more wit at the end where Wilma says, "Do you want to dance?" And Buck's like, "Yeah." And he says, "Twiggy will dance with you." And he's like, "Beady, beady, beady."
Yeah, he says, "Do you mind if I lead?" Because Twiggy had actually asked her to dance before that.
Wilma?
Twiggy had asked Wilma. She said, "No, thank you." So that's how she knew Twiggy was looking for a dance partner.
Oh.
And she volunteered Buck.
I must have missed that.
Yeah. Like, "Hey, do you want to dance?"
It was a good episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was entertaining. It definitely have been entertaining so far.
So the next one will be Unchained Women. It sounds really good.
Is that a two-parter?
I think it's just a one-parter.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I think we got a lot of one-parters coming up.
Mm.
We're getting close to our Dala coming back up in the Space Vampire episode. Yeah.
Yeah, you said that's one of your favorites, right?
Well, that's of all the Buck Rogers episodes that I remember watching as a kid, because I haven't watched these since I was a kid. Like, I haven't seen them in repeat or anything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I watched them all when they were coming out. Like, it was a night of TV watching that I had to watch. I might have missed one or two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that stand out in my mind are the Adala episodes, because I thought she was awesome. And a great villain, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because she's, like, sexually attracted to Buck, so that's her weakness. Or she'd succeed a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But the other ones is the Space Vampire. It sticks out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I remember all the villains. I just don't remember exactly what happened. Like, I remember this guy's burnt face. And I remember the woman, because I was like, "Man, she is mean."
Yeah. Yeah, he has a burnt face, and looks like he's missing an eye because he has some sort of technological replacement for it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're pretty messed up.
And the Unchained Women, Jamie Lee Curtis is in there. How about that?
Oh, nice.
Michael Delano. I mean, so there are a lot of people that I recognize in these TV shows. So it's a good... I don't know. I'm having fun. I'm having a lot of fun. Like, I don't consider this a chore when I watch it. I almost want to watch the next one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it won't be fresh in my head.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I have enough trouble remembering from one day to the next, let alone.
Yeah, especially when you have no caffeine.
A couple weeks, I know.
Pass out.
Can't even stay awake.
Good thing you found that out, or you might have hit the keyboard.
I know. Face plant.
Face plant on the keyboard. So let's talk some comics. I'll kick this one off because I got a short one.
Sounds good.
I bought Incredible Hulk number 449, written by Peter David with art by Mike Diodato Jr. And one thing I really liked was the paper. It wasn't that glossy paper. This is from, 1997, when it still had paper. A little bit thicker than, like, the Silver Age and Bronze Age paper, but it was still paper. And I think it makes art look so much better than the glossy stuff. Like, even when you pick up, for example, if you read something like the Valiant Masters, which is, you know, reprinting the old Valiant comics, they tend to have the paper that was used during when Valiant was publishing. It wasn't that glossy stuff. But then if you get like an omnibus, you get the glossy stuff. And I swear, at least my eyes like the paper. It makes the art look better. I don't know what it is. It's just bizarre.
No, I feel the same way.
It's like the gloss takes something away from the line. I don't understand it, but like, I don't technically understand why it's so not appealing to me as much as the old stuff. But this one opens up with the Hulk this is a terrible jump on issue. It's a horrible. it is. I'm in midstream into some thing. I don't know what the hell is going on. And it is the reason I bought this is it's the first appearance of the Thunderbolts. And I guess this is before the big reveal that the leadership, Citizen V is or five, what do you want to call him, is the is really a bad guy. You know, mm-hmm. before the big reveal that happens in Thunderbolts one, this is the Thunderbolts' first appearance, and there's this weird woman with a staff, and it doesn't really talk about her, but she's got like some influence over the Hulk. And she's working with the Hulk. And then all of a sudden, when the Hulk gets blasted by that missile, the Thunderbolts show up. Just for no reason. And Mach 1, who's one of the... A lot of these... The Thunderbolts are really like a superhero team that showed up. And one of the big reveals of the Thunderbolts, which I'm spoiling, but they've been around forever, is that they're super villains as these heroes.
Yeah.
So, like, this Mach 1 was the Beetle, you know? These are all villains. And Mach 1 was trying to rescue the one woman that was with the Hulk. Like, she's got superpowers and a staff, and she just blasts him because she doesn't know who he is or what he's doing there. And the Hulk was blasted by the missile into a rodeo. And the cowboy's knocked off his horse. And then the Thunderbolts show up. Songbird, Atlas, Moonstone. And the one guy that I forgot was Techno. I totally forgot he was a member of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they start blasting the Hulk or and the Hulk just raises his hands. I don't even know what this meant. Like he's surrendering. And it's like he's not even there. I don't understand that part of the story. I was so confused. Matter of fact, this one woman that... Her name is Janice, the one with the staff that's fighting Mach 1. Man, this is such a confusing story. Other than it's a battle between the Thunderbolts and the Hulk. And they're trying to just calm him down before he destroys stuff, like to be superheroes in front of the media. And it doesn't work out too well because they weren't having much damage until the Hulk decides to ram himself into a dam and jeopardize a whole town because the water's flowing in and then the Thunderbolts have to essentially save that town. And after the Hulk does that, he collapses, and Janice is like, "Hulk, are you okay?" And that's it. But it is such a confusing issue. But Deodato art is so different from like what he's doing in Avengers today. Like, it is so different. I remember his art when he did Wonder Woman and Artemis and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I like this older style better. It's more. It looks like it's more drawn instead of digital. Now it looks like more of a digital line.
Mm.
But I'm not an expert to be able to tell you if that's true or not.
Mm-hmm.
But so that was from 1997, The Incredible Hulk, 449. Very confusing story. Like. In this particular case, I wish I had a, you know, they do the Marvel in comics now. They give you that front page and kind of get you up to speed.
Yeah.
I wish I had that in this book because I was lost.
So you think that's the main reason it was confusing?
I think I would have enjoyed this more if I had the surrounding story. Like, mm-hmm. I think the Thunderbolts were meant to just be thrown into the story, but I have no idea who this Janice person was,
mm-hmm.
or where even the Hulk was in his. The Hulk's had very various, you know, is he the smart Hulk? Is he the dumb Hulk? I even had trouble finding out because the Hulk didn't say much. Do you know what I mean? He was just there. And it was really hard to even know where I was in Hulk history.
Mm.
And the Thunderbolts were just a team that were there to try to help the situation, whatever the situation was, and I don't even know what it was.
Mm. Because then sometimes I think comics end up confusing because there's maybe not good communication between the artist and the writer, you know?
Yeah. No, this was not, like, it was not an art and writer problem. I could tell they were conveying. I just didn't know how I was in any of the situation. I didn't know where I was in the storyline.
Gotcha.
Jim Shooter would have had a heart attack with this issue.
The Thunderbolts are a pretty cool team. I was trying to remember when you were talking, because you mentioned that Mach 1 was a Beatle, and I was trying to remember who some of the other ones were. I'm pretty sure Songbird was Screaming Mimi.
Songbird was Screaming Mimi. Moonstone. God, I can't remember what her name was.
I feel like, because Moonstone was just a villain as Moonstone, wasn't she?
I didn't even remember. What's it? Baron Zemo was Mach 5.
5, right. Yeah. And
or not Mach 5, Citizen 5, sorry.
Citizen 5, yeah. Citizen 5 and Mach 1.
Yeah. Atlas was Goliath, I think, or the old Power Man, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Screaming Mimi was definitely Songbird. What is her name? Maybe Moonstone was her evil name. I don't remember what her name was here.
Mm-hmm.
Meteorite.
Okay, Moonstone
was the bad Avengers villain.
Right, because she was
Meteorite is her name in the Thunderbolts. Sorry about that.
And then Techno, I think he ended up taking on a bunch of different identities.
Can't remember Techno, but
even
now,
after this,
but it is weird because I remember all the Thunderbolts. Do you know what I, mean? They like implanted in my brain. I did not remember Techno, and I read a good portion of the Thunderbolt series. I think I left when it became Fight Club, and I came back to it with some of the Luke Cage stuff, but I've never really stuck with it. But they've always interested me because sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not.
Mm-hmm. It was good for a long time. I think I read a bunch of early Thunderbolts, and it started out written by Kurt Busiek and then switched to Fabian Nicieza took it over. And under both of them, it was just really good, solid superhero comics with a twist. You know, after the big reveal, eventually they actually turn into more of supervillains that actually are trying to do good for real.
Yeah.
New members are brought in and out and things like that. But it's definitely enjoyable. And then at some point, as you said, Marvel started messing around with the format. And I think that was the Fight Club one or whatever the first attempted reboot of the concept was, really did not work. And then they went back and they called it the New Thunderbolts, but basically it was a return to the old Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
They even brought back Nicieza to write, because they're like, I guess that was a bad move.
But they've had a pretty successful run and they're still going today. I mean, the title's going today. It's very, very different than the original, but it's a good concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was kind of disappointed though, because I did read Thunderbolts number one, and I guess I expected more from the intro of them. Maybe a little bit of backstory, you know, a little bit of, and instead they were just. It's even hard to say that this team created them because they're not the Thunderbolts I know.
No,
they were just there as a convenient, if I was Peter David, I'm writing a story. I need to put a group of people together to fight the Hulk. That's what they felt like in this.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't know that they were supervillains. Peter David probably had an inkling for what they were going to be. Like, mm-hmm. they probably, you know, editorial probably said, hey, you could throw these guys in there. They're going to get a series soon. Mm. And this is the concept of them. Mm-hmm. But he just used them as a plot device to mm-hmm. fight the Hulk.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the concept's changed a lot. And I think the current incarnation, it's more of a matter of them, you know, keeping the name Thunderbolts in circulation. It doesn't really connect to, it's more of a team of, unless things have changed in the last year or something, but it's more of a team of vigilantes, like anti-heroes, than yeah. it is about, and it's less interesting to me personally, but I like the concept of villains trying to not be anti-heroes, but trying to struggle to be real, actual heroes, and that was kind of interesting in the original Thunderbolts, is that, you know, some of the members would end up going back to crime, and some of them would just struggle with it. I mean, they really genuinely were trying to be a hero, but it wasn't something that had come naturally to them, so they were making mistakes and stuff, and that made it gave a kind of a neat twist on your standard superhero team.
Yeah.
So, cool. I would like to reread those.
I dipped my toe into the... I haven't done it, the Charles Soule... that guy's really writing a lot of good stuff, but mm-hmm. I did join the issue when it was like Punisher and Elektra. What an odd group. And I usually like odd mm-hmm. groups, but I've always had trouble of like solo characters being on it. Like Punisher doesn't belong on a team. Like mm-hmm. Red Hulk, why is he even forming this team? You know, like Thunderbolt mm-hmm. Ross. It's bizarre.
Well, there are teams that are odd because they have unusual, like B-list or C-list characters on it, and you're like, oh, that's like, that attracts me because I like to see different characters and stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's teams that are odd because they don't make sense together, and you get the sense that they probably wouldn't even be together unless editorial thought, these characters are all cool and badass, let's stick it together because people will buy it. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I guess you could say about Ghost Rider being in the Champions, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, Hercules and Black Widow and the other ones, they worked, they fell into that other category, I think. Mm-hmm. Like people that could be in a team and work together. Iceman and Angel already did, you know, mm-hmm. just throwing the Ghost Rider in there. That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But
even in that case, because he's the odd man out and there's only one of them, it's just kind of like,
not, it's
funny.
It's not too bizarre. They even make fun of that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that last issue I read, the media was saying, like, you shouldn't be working with the Ghost Rider. He's bad for your image, you know?
mm-hmm.
So they even knew that.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It's if they're in the dollar bin or something and I get an inkling. I do want to try it because it's Charles Soule, and I do. God, what he's doing with the Superman Wonder Woman book.
Mm-hmm.
Holy Lord, is that good. That's a good book.
Yeah, I was looking at an interview with him about that comic. It sounds like I haven't really read much that he's read.
Oh, man.
Or that he's written, but I've heard, you know, good things about him. And
He's doing She-Hulk. He's doing so many mm-hmm. titles, and everything that he's Swamp Thing, everything that he's done, Red Lanterns, I am enjoying, you know? Mm-hmm. I can't point out anything that I'm not, other than I haven't read Letter 44 and I haven't read Thunderbolts. You know, maybe I need to be reading it.
Mm-hmm.
He's just you know, some writing styles really work for me. The way he puts words together mm-hmm. really works for me. Even if I don't care about the concept,
mm-hmm.
he writes well. At least my brain, there's some writers where my brain doesn't absorb what the writer's trying to tell me, or it doesn't flow well for me. This mm-hmm. guy, it flows well. Like
I know
exactly what he's telling me.
Mm-hmm.
He's good. I mean,
yeah.
I think he's good. I know that Daryl loves him too.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Temple loves him.
Yeah, and it seems like in the general comic community people are receiving his work well. I mean, he's obviously getting a lot of work. So, and, but yeah, I mean, I have some writers like that, that for me, where, even if they're writing something, I'm not necessarily interested in the character or the concept, I like their writing so much that I'll usually like it,
mm-hmm.
you know, but, so, well, I mentioned already earlier that I had read, Quasar number one, and this one is, speaking also of Mark Gruenwald, that's the writer of this, with breakdowns by Paul Ryan and finishes by Danny Bulinati. Don't recognize his name, but Paul Ryan I do. And this is called The Price of Power, and it's the origin of Quasar. And the first couple pages are a flashback to, events that happened previously in the Marvel Universe back in the day, relates into Fantastic Four and how there was this individual who had these power gauntlets, and he ended up disintegrating. His name was Robert Grayson. He was known as Marvel Boy. He ended up disintegrating from the use of the power and the bracelets, and that they were taken by the Fantastic Four and then eventually were turned over to S.H.I.E.L.D. And so in the present day, we find ourselves at a meeting given by Nick Fury to various scientists and different professionals and stuff. And Tony Stark is one of them. And they're wanting to
Hello? Did I lose you again? Damn it.
He approaches Nick Fury after the meeting to say, my son is actually here training to be a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. His name's Wendell Vaughn. Is there any chance I might see him? So Nick tells him he can pull some strings and find out where he's at and get him a look at his son. So his So they take him to where his son is training. He's in like martial arts training, and there's it's like a danger room style view where they're in a booth up above, looking down at the people training. And Dr. Vaughn, interestingly, is only interested in observing his son training. He's actually brought in there by Dugan, and he's not interested in actually meeting his son. He just wanted to see him. And so after this, Wendell is in his kind of final evaluations, and he goes before Dugan and a couple other S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, and they tell him that he's not going to be a field agent because he, even though he's got top marks in all their different categories of classes and everything like that, he's very smart, but he just doesn't have a mean streak. He has no killer instinct. So he's not obviously going to get flunked out because he's a great asset, but they are going to probably, he's probably going to get a desk job or something like that, which he's really disappointed about. So, meanwhile, Dr. Vaughn and others have taken on this project to test these bracelets, and they're looking for an individual. They bring in this test pilot guy, this kind of hotshot dude named William Wesley, who's going to be the person to try out these gauntlets and wear them and do different tests and things like that. And we find out that within Vaughn's crew, there is a plant from some sort of alternate organization. He sneaks out for a moment and transmits to somebody who we don't know who some details about their testings and stuff. So they put this test pilot through all these tests, and they're just about to start when they can't get the bracelets off of him. And his body's starting to glow with the energy that these bracelets shoot out. And just like happened long ago to Robert Grayson, he explodes and the bracelets fall to the earth. So that guy that we saw earlier, the traitor that's transmitting to another group, we see him press a button on his wristwatch, and all of a sudden there's this massive attack, and one of the SHIELD agents recognizes it as a ship of AIM, Advanced Idea Mechanics. So,
you just gave me a segue for my next book. Thank you.
Oh, there you go. I have another appearance of AIM myself. This week. They're all over the place. So
I think I'm going to call this episode AIM.
There you go.
There you go. And then I'll put the toothpaste commercial in there.
Yeah. AIM. Assholes in motion. So in between here, rather than get a desk job, Wesley finds out that he's assigned to security detail at the site where his dad's doing these testings, but he hasn't seen his dad or told him that he's there because they sort of have an estranged relationship, and we find out that his parents are divorced because his father is so driven and so focused on his work that he didn't have any time for his family. And, Wesley actually lives with his mom and has a much better relationship with her. So they see each other right in the midst of this battle. And, you know, Wesley doesn't even know why he's been assigned to this place, except for he thinks, it's like somebody asked him, do you think your dad pulled strings to get you there? And he said, you know, I doubt it. It's probably somebody in SHIELD thinking they're doing me a favor. So he ends up in the unlikely situation of trying to defend his father from the AIM agents that are attacking. And there's this huge AIM spaceship descending from the sky. And they're all in battle armor. So desperate to make a difference, Wesley grabs the bracelets that are still laying where they landed when the test pilot disintegrated. And he has this strange vision of other worlds and alien intelligences when he first puts them on. But then, you know, he doesn't have much time to analyze that before he has to defend his father from a bunch of AIM agents. So his father's kind of coaching him as they go as to how they use the bracelets. And, you know, when I read this as a kid, I really was not very familiar with DC. But the way that he uses the bracelets at times definitely nowadays reminded me of the Green Lantern Power Ring.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's making a hammer out of the energy beam, and he makes like a ram head to push them back, and he makes like two big hands to smash them together. So it definitely reminded me of Green Lantern there. So he's basically becomes the one man army against the AIM. And it's clear that without the power bracelets and him being there and be able to have a little more control of them, that they probably wouldn't have been able to defend the base.
Did they call them the quantum bracelets, or does it have a certain name? Did the bracelets have anything to do with Captain Marvel or no?
Yeah, he was the original guy to use them.
Okay. Does it mention it in that issue?
Yeah, the first page talks about how there was a kid in the costume named Robert Grayson, better known as Marvel Boy. As far as we can tell, he's the first one to ever wear those bracelets. He used them.
Yeah, you said Marvel Boy, but I didn't remember if it was had anything to do with Captain Marvel. You know, the guy who died of cancer.
Yeah, I'm definitely rusty on where that all fits in.
I don't know either. But I was just wondering if they didn't show a picture of Captain Marvel at all, did they?
Mm-mm, no.
Okay, so just Marvel Boy.
Yeah. And the Marvel Boy that they show, it's like a 50s style version of the costume that Quasar ends up wearing.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so the AIM spaceship starts to retreat, and at this point, Wesley is definitely getting to the point where he's having trouble containing all the energy that the bracelets are giving off, and he's glowing like the test pilot did before he exploded. And he's feeling, I mean, while his father and scientists down below are trying to coach him, you know, to not keep using the power, that the thinking that the more power that he uses, the worse it's going to be, he's internally feeling that he has to expend the energy, so he has to use a lot of power to blow it off. So he's pursuing the spaceship, and he feels that he has to expend and try to do a massive blast, and he does that, and essentially is able to blast this huge spaceship in half by doing so. But he finds out that he was kind of wrong about his guesstimate there, and that he's actually, his father may have been correct, that he's even closer to being overwhelmed by all the power. So he flies up into outer space, hoping that he won't take out, there won't be any collateral damage when he explodes. So he says, he's thinking to himself, I might as well relax. Why fight it? Just flow, ride it like a wave out. You know, I'm going to die. I shouldn't spend my last moments struggling. And it's when he does that all the excess energy dissipates, and he's still protected by a force field from the bracelets, so that he can breathe in space, but otherwise he's not glowing, and he's back to looking fairly normal. And as he's flying back to Earth, he contemplates that the reason that the Marvel Boy and the test pilot exploded was that they were struggling against it, and that it was perhaps his nature that led to him not being able to get the assignment that he wanted within S.H.I.E.L.D. is this very same characteristic that allows him to be calm in times of battle and disconnect from that fighting instinct and calm his body and able to control the power of the bracelets. And so there's a nice moment with him and his father where his father rushes forward when he arrives, and Wendell's assuming that his father is concerned with the bracelets and is excited that his son is able to control them, and he's just interested in his project. But then when his father reaches him, he gives him a big hug, and he realizes he was concerned for his son. So, then Nick Fury shows up, and as much as I'd hate to break up this touching scene, he goes ahead and recruits Quasar at that moment. And that's how the issue ends. So I really enjoy it. I thought it was a nice, positive, classic style superhero tale. And, I have issue 2 sitting here, so I'll be checking that out, but I'll probably pick up some more of these. And I compare it to when I read it as a child, but I still actually don't quite remember if I read it right from the beginning, or I know it was early on, so if I didn't read this one, if I keep reading it, I'm sure to get to those that I read there for a little while.
Yeah. I don't think I started reading it until like way later.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have issue 2. So I must have read that issue, but I don't remember it. And then I started at issue 33, Galactic Storm. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? I think that's what tied me in. Operation Galactic Storm events.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then I jumped in because, hey, you know, that's what an event does. Mm-hmm. And then I stuck with it almost till the very end.
Okay. What did it run? Something like 60 issues?
Yeah, 60. Had a good run. Had a good run for a character that is not too... But there's some Infinity Gauntlet type tie-ins too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Marvel Cosmic was doing fairly well at that time, and that's like, it was a good time for there to be a Quasar book, because it... Silver Surfer was fairly popular, and the whole Infinity Gauntlet thing, I think, just Marvel Cosmic in general benefited from. I mean, I think that's what kind of drew me in, and I found it to be a solid read. And like you said, it's still not a character that's very popular. It's not a run that's very popular. So
Could find them pretty cheap though.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a good, it's a solid run because Grenwald is Grenwald's known for his story building. Like,
mm-hmm.
he's got big visions. So,
yeah, I like Grenwald. Definitely, it's well written. Just solidly constructed. You know, it's like well written. You could tell he's a professional. You don't lose track of what's going on. It's very easy to pick up one of his issues and read it, and it keeps you, it grabs you, just like sort of in the same way as I think of Busick and Nicieza in this category of just solid professional comic book writers that know how to structure a comic, know how to write specifically for comics,
and know how to put supporting characters, know how to build around the main character.
Yeah,
just solid.
Yeah, put in like your subplots to tease and keep you interested. Like when one story resolved, it just keeps flowing right into another.
Good soap opera writers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, totally. And I don't know who, I don't know how much of the series he did, but Paul Ryan, is a good artist. So
yeah, he's solid.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mike Manley took over later on.
Okay,
but I don't know a lot of stories, but because Paul Ryan did a lot of X-Men, right?
Yeah, there was. Yeah, it wasn't for a while, and
after
John Byrne and stuff.
I think I reviewed one book in this show, DP7, and he drew it. And he's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's a good artist. Very detailed, like George Perez type,
right?
Artist school, you know. Not the same style, but as far as attention to line work detail, he's pretty good.
Yeah, that's that style that they would fit into, where, like you said, there's a lot of attention to detail. There's a fair amount of realism, and it's not super stylized.
Yeah.
Like you would have with like a McFarlane or something. So, yeah, good first issue.
Cool deal. And I'm going to link the AIM ish on my next book. So I continue my journey on Avengers. The last Avengers I covered was 86, and I'm jumping to Avengers 87, which is revealed at last the origin of T'Challa, which is the Black Panther, which is a pretty good issue. I got this book for dirt cheap, and man, it is a really nice looking book. Like, I'm starting to look at grades a lot, and this, man, this looks really good. Like, the paper is totally white. It's just a really nice looking book. This is by Roy Thomas, and the artist is usually Sal Buscema at this time, but it says Frank Gaia Chia and Sal Buscema. And I
Gia Cola.
There, thank you. Okay.
There you go.
That's a tough one. Have you heard his name before?
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to tell you where, but I've definitely come across it.
That name doesn't ring a bell with me, and I've read a lot of comics.
I want to say I think he's done DC stuff.
Huh.
But
A very nice style. Nothing that jumps out at you is like, wow, this guy's really good. But he's a very good storyteller, and you know, fits into this time period really well. Story opens up, you know, they just had that adventure with Squadron Supreme. You know, I talked about that. And it's kind of like a down issue. They're in Avengers Mansion, and Alfred's bringing tea to everybody. And Black Panther is bummed out. Like, he's an Iron Man kind of says, you know, what's wrong? And he's kind of like homesick. And they mention that they don't know much about him. Like, they don't know much of his backstory. So he kind of goes off and tells the origin of his of how he came to become the Black Panther. And it opens up with T'Chaka, which is his father. And, you know, he always protected Wakanda, and he raised his son that he'll be the next chieftain. And, but early on, he takes his son to the Eternal Peak, which is where they keep the vibranium. And he's like, you always have to protect this peak. You know, people will be coming for this vibranium. It's what makes Wakanda special. You have to protect it. And then it goes off into Claw, which is the master of sound, going to Wakanda and stealing vibranium and killing his father. So that's how he at least made the next step, where he talked to Nabaza, which was his father's trusted witch doctor. Nabaza knew that he was next to be chieftain in line, and he says, well, if he had Nabaza's son was called Matumba, and Matumba was like his best friend, T'Challa's best friend, and he was always trying to cheer up T'Challa, but T'Challa was always, since his father's death, like driven and knew his goal in life was to become the next chieftain. And Nabaza sent them to Europe and to the Americas to learn. And that's where he learned physics, chemistry, everything he needed to know. And he sent Matumba with him to be his friend so he wouldn't go into culture shock. And they went through schools together. They graduated together. And that'll come into play later on. But once he graduated from college, then he went back. Harley, do you want to go in or out? You can't have both. It's too cold. I can't leave the door open. Crazy girl. She just keeps knocking. And then I open the door and she doesn't want to go out. It's like, what the hell?
I put Luna out this morning and I looked at the temperature and it said it felt like 1 degrees. Yeah. I'm like, you're going to go in the backyard. And so I knew I was watching her, so I knew she had done her business. But then she was standing there. And so I walked to the back door and I looked at her and waved her in. And she's just standing there, and then she started barking at me. And I realized that her cord was caught on a tree branch that had fallen.
Yeah.
So she's like, I'm stuck, damn it. Come out here and get me. So I had to put my shoes on and walk out help her out there.
What cord?
We have we don't have a fence.
You basically strap that on, and then she can move along.
Yeah, it's Kara's dad put it up a while back.
Yeah.
It's a line that goes from the back of our house to a tree.
Yeah.
And then it's a cord on that line.
Right.
That moves along back and forth. So.
Yeah, so she can't leave the yard. That's a good deal. But then you have to go out and get her.
Yeah. So normally she'll run back in, and I'll just detach her from the cord, but she got caught on the branch.
Yeah. So back to T'Challa, he gets back, and he's got several tasks he has to do to become the next chieftain, or Black Panther. The first task is he has to fight like 10 warriors and win, and he manages to do that. The second task is he actually goes into the like this panther construct to get the costume, and that didn't really seem like a task, but that was his second task, to find everything, and which is a lot different than I remember from the modern tasks. Like, he had more trials that I remember to have to do. And the third one is he has to climb this mountain, find this this thing that he has to eat, this sacred herb. And once he eats it, then he will have enhanced strength and, you know, really have the power of the panther. And he goes there to do that task, and he finds AIM. AIM is there stealing vibranium. And he's like, holy crap. And they start shooting at him immediately. Like, they detect his presence. They start blasting at the mountains, you know, shooting their laser guns. And Black Panther starts fighting him. And he's like, in his thought bubbles, he's like, how did AIM know to come here for the vibranium? And he's like, do I have a traitor amongst us? And he thinks the traitor's his father's most trusted friend, which is the witch doctor. But no, it's his son that he went to school with. And he was jealous of T'Challa's success. And he, in his college years, decided to join AIM to move along in his career and steal the vibranium. But T'Challa gets through to him, and he actually betrays AIM, and they start working together. But too little, too late, AIM actually shoots him in the face, his friend, and he ends up dying. And he's kind of like, don't tell my father, you know, that I betrayed Wakanda and stuff. And, you know, so, but Tumba dies, and he walks off sad. And at the very end, as he's talking to Thor and Giant Man and everybody, it makes it sound like he is so wanting to go back and become chieftain again and leave the Avengers. Mm-hmm. So this might lead to him leaving the Avengers. It might not. I don't know. We'll see. But it was a really good issue. I enjoyed it.
So it's treated as...
I love Black Panther.
Yeah.
Favorite character.
So it's treated as kind of a flashback in the context of...
Yeah, because you had all this action, you know, with the Squadron Sinister the last couple issues, and then this was kind of like them sitting around the table. It was like a modern-day Bendis issue. Let's sit down around the table and talk.
Yeah.
And, it was a good issue. I enjoyed it. It was quite a bit. And there's a shake.
Yeah.
Both shakes.
Luna came into the room and did her shake. Not to be outdone.
I think Harley could outshake her, though, because she's got part Great Dane in her and Slobber. If she shakes enough, especially after a walk, Slobber just goes all over the place.
Oh, man. Yeah, Luna doesn't have Slobber, thankfully.
Yeah, she doesn't look like the breed that would drool all over.
Mm-mm. No. But our cat the other day...
Your get ready. Slobbers.
No, but I'm not surprised. He's like... I looked at him the other day, I'm like, and I said... You do know that cats are supposed to be clean and graceful, don't you? I don't know if you're any of those things. But he definitely seems like a boy, that's for sure. Because he'll go down in the basement and his litter box is down there. And sometimes he'll just come up and he'll just be sitting there hanging out, you know, with this huge dust ball on his face or stuck in his whiskers. And you know, just sitting there. It doesn't faze him.
Mm-hmm.
The other night, I'm getting ready for bed, and Kara's already in bed, and he usually sleeps at the end of the bed or in between us or something. So he is already on the bed as well. And I hear her say, "Oh man!" And then I think I'm going to need your help here. I said, "What's going on?" She said, "He's got poop on his butt."
Oh no!
So he had, went to the litter box and had a few little dingleberries
stuck to his ass.
Yeah, to his fur. She grabbed like a tissue or something, was trying to get it off there, but he obviously wasn't going to cooperate, and he's fighting her. So we're standing there on opposite sides of him. He's trying to fight us both off. Then he jumps off the bed, and so we're chasing after him so he doesn't rub the poop on something. And finally, I got a hold of him, and I had to hold him down while she cleaned his butt off. I'm like, oh my god, man.
Yeah.
So it was pretty funny, but so I've been calling him Poopy Pants.
Yeah, Barb's calling Harley Poopy McGee because I took her on a walk.
Oh yeah, I think I saw.
And I was adjusting my headsets. I usually walk her and it's cold. It was like 23 degrees, and sometimes my headset will fall out of my ear. Mm-hmm. And it fell out of my ear, so I took my gloves off, and I was adjusting my headsets, and I turn, and Harley's got this huge piece of poop in her mouth. I mean, it was awful. And I'm like, Harley, drop it. And she's chewing on this piece of poop like it's gum. And I'm like, get it out. And she drops it, and I was like, man, that was a big piece of poop. But she's had the nickname Poopy McGee all week. She eats poop.
Oh man, it's crazy what they'll go after.
I'm like, Harley, do you know what could be in there? I mean, there could be parasites, you could have chiggers. Mm-hmm. What the hell? I don't know what. And I usually keep an eye on her really good, so she doesn't do it, but I just happen to be, you know.
But they're fast though.
Yeah, oh yeah. I just turned my head for a second just to get my earbuds back in my ear, and bang, she's eating poop.
Yeah, Luna has done that a couple times. If I am not paying attention or walking, the one day she picked up a half-eaten sandwich that somebody had thrown out their window, or some kid. They have teenagers walk through the neighborhood, stuff tossed on the ground. She just grabbed it, started chewing. I'm like, oh man, that's gross. And if the cat throws up, we got to keep her away from it.
She'll eat it.
Yeah. So yeah, animals.
All right, what do you got next?
So, all right, we'll keep the aim true. With another issue of New Warriors, number two, numero dos. Los Nuevos. I don't know what Warriors is in Spanish.
Huevos. I don't think that's it.
Huevos, that's eggs.
Eggs, yeah. That sounded like what you said. Nos huevos.
Nuevos huevos, the new eggs. So this, on the cover, you have all the New Warriors except for Night Thrasher in color in the foreground. They're surrounded by... They have got a whole bunch of futuristic weapons pointed at them, and Speedball is in the crosshairs of one of them we can see. And then in the background, there's Night Thrasher getting punched by this other dude, and it says, "Who is Midnight's Fire, and why does Night Thrasher fear him? Plus, the menace of the weapons of AIM." I like that it says plus, like it's like the cover of Cosmo or something.
Yeah.
Featuring such and such an actress, plus seven sex tips to keep him in bed.
Nova had an awful costume at that time. I mean, the red just
it's almost all red.
Not a good color, because Nova's costume is pretty awesome, like his current stuff.
Yeah, honestly, they're not the most photogenic group in general.
Yeah. Not the best costume designs.
No. Namorita, she's all right. But she basically just wears a bathing suit.
Yeah. So. Night Thrasher's is okay.
Yeah, I still think he's pretty cool.
Starfire is very retro to the cartoon.
Firestar, you mean?
Yeah, Firestar. Did I say Starfire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Close enough. But so this...
Starfire's costume's way better.
Yeah. hers has more in common with Namorita's, really.
Yeah, except a lot more revealing.
Yeah. So this starts off where this new team that got decided to stick together last issue are training at their headquarters, which is Dwayne Turner, or Night Thrasher's place. And they're in kind of a danger room kind of sequence where they're all training in this big room. And Speedball is flying around, and Namorita's doing the Colossus act with a big, huge piece of machinery lifted up in one hand. You got Firestar and Nova racing each other around in the sky, and Marvel Boy trying to uses telekinetic powers and stuff. And everything kind of goes wrong. There's a, you know, people start colliding, things crash and stuff. And it's actually caused by Ty, one of Night Thrasher's two guardians, rushing into the middle of training, kind of causes a distraction, causes that ricochet of everybody getting messed up. But the reason she does so is because she's holding a newspaper, and the heading has relevance to Night Thrasher's past. It's the Daily Bugle, and it says, three police officers found killed, which we saw a bit in the first couple pages of the issue, a little bit of a preview of that. And there, in the photograph to accompany the article, there is a piece of paper in the foreground that says Thrashed by the Night, which is meant to get Dwayne's attention. So we then flash back as he fills in his teammates to his earlier days prior New Warriors, where he was trying to connect with these other individuals in the city that he thought were, you know, it's kind of like an earlier attempt or earlier efforts prior to becoming Night Thrasher and putting together New Warriors. He's following this girl who's making a drop off some drug trafficking. And so he jumps into the middle of it. And all of a sudden, this other individual, this other guy, shows up and takes him out, takes out Night Thrasher. And so, but after a moment, they have a conversation where this guy tells him his name's Midnight Fire, and him, the woman, is his sister, and they're actually undercover looking to double-cross these gangs that are, it's actually not a drug trafficking thing, they're doing a protection racket scheme. So he joins up with them, him and the woman, whose name is Silhouette, goes by Silhouette, short, Sil for short. They start to have feelings for each other, and it's like a trio for a while, the three of them, when they are in the midst of one of their patrols, and Midnight's Fire shows a disregard for the life of a cop that shows up on the scene. So you know, Dwayne has a real problem with that, so he's holding them back. And as a result, there's a firefight between the gang member nearby and the policeman. And both the gang member, the policeman, and Silhouette all get shot. So Midnight's Fire finally breaks free at that moment, because him and Dwayne are both shocked. And Midnight's Fire cuts Dwayne across the cheek, leaving him with a scar, and then rushes to see his sister. So Night Thrasher thinks that Silhouette's dead, and Midnight's Fire vows to get revenge and pay him back for what happened. And that was, you know, the end of their collaboration. So we get back to the present, and now that the rest of the team's been filled in, we get an old school ad for Bonk's Adventure for the TurboGrafx-16, which is it's always funny to see in the back. Actually, in the back of this comic, there's an ad for Super Contra for the Nintendo.
That Super Graphics? What is that one?
TurboGrafx-16.
Is that the Sega one?
No, it was a competitor with Sega and Nintendo.
I can't picture that at all. I'm gonna have to Google that.
Yeah, it was like a third for a little while. It was pretty expensive, and it seemed like super advanced, because it was, I think, either the first or one of the first 16-bit. That's why they called it TurboGrafx-16, because they wanted to advertise that it was 16-bit, whereas the original Nintendo and Sega Master System were 8-bit. But once the Super Nintendo came out and the Sega Genesis came out, and you know, those were 16-bit systems. The TurboGrafx kind of ended up being, you know, like a third place sort of deal. It was definitely like my generation. It was definitely pretty well known.
Really? Because, man, I'm looking at it now, and man, it does not register at all.
Yeah, I mean, the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis were way more well known, but that would be like the third tier.
Wow, this is new to me.
So yeah, the ad in here is for the game's Bonk's Adventure, and there were several Bonk's games. He's a little caveman with a huge head and a little body, and what you would do is actually attack people with his head. You'd smash his huge head into enemies. And Bonk was like their attempt at having a Mario or a Sonic, you know, a mascot for the company. That would be like, they would try to catch on and become popular and stuff. So there you go. Little video game retro.
it's so bizarre that I just don't, I'm just amazed I don't remember it, because I was knee deep in this time period in games.
Mm.
This looks like some kind of like Sears console or something that was like, I don't know. It's bizarre.
It was bizarre. And actually they were, instead of...
it was not popular though, was it?
I mean,
like it must have had a short life. Like
it did. And I mean, it was, I guess it seemed interesting to me at the time, because that was a time when you had Nintendo or Sega,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that was it. And then they came around, and there was, for a little while there was such a boom in video games that there was various companies that tried to do the same thing. Like there was the Neo Geo.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, which that was so expensive that unless you were like a, you know, independent, you know, like as a kid, you couldn't get your parents to buy you that. You had to be like probably like a dude and with like no family and your own job or something. But yeah, and it was like, whereas games were all cartridges back then, the TurboGrafx-16 had these like thin little cards, like a smaller than a cell phone, but flat and rectangular with the little, with the chips exposed at the end of it.
Yeah. And they like had Pac-Man and Pac-Land and stuff. It's very strange. I remember this one game, cause I'm looking at images right now, called Splatterland. Like I remember, I think I used to get like a gaming magazine and it would tell you like all the different games that were coming out, plus give you cheats.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing this thing and I was like, what is that? It looks like a Friday the 13th type game. And it was for this guy, sure enough.
Yeah, Splatterhouse, I think it was called.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, it was a total Friday the 13th ripoff. I mean, the dude looked just like Jason.
Yeah.
And
that's an interesting system.
That was a pretty well-known game. I definitely saw a lot of ads for it and stuff. But, another thing I was going to say was that they were one of the first to have a CD-ROM peripheral, TurboGrafx CD, and, you know, shortly after, like, Sega tried one with the Genesis, but they were kind of the first company to have, like, a alternative to Nintendo and Sega before Sony decided to do this PlayStation and everything changed. There,
it's fascinating thing we could talk about for hours, but like this was probably technically better. It just never took off because of price, you know. Just mm-hmm. goes to show how marketing, you know,
yeah,
such a big deal, because I didn't even know this existed. I mean, I probably do, but it's just not in my memory, like at all. Like I've never played it for sure. I guarantee I have never played it. I have any friends that had one?
Mm-hmm. See, I did have a friend that had one, and I was really jealous of it. Especially earlier on, because you had the gaming magazines, and you'd see the graphics, and compared to the regular Nintendo, which is only 8-bit, like they just looked so amazing, and I just would look at the photos and and just long. I just wanted one so bad. But then when, because they got out ahead of the game, but once Nintendo and Sega had their 16-bit systems, like it was too much competition.
Yeah.
And that's why they never, had a follow-up to it. But anyways.
That was a sidebar.
Yeah. Video game console history is pretty interesting, though. I agree. So where AIM comes into the story is it turns out that Midnight's Fire has kind of drifted from his earlier intentions, his earlier lifestyle and stuff. And he's actually made a deal with AIM. So the new warriors respond to this news article, which Midnight's Fire is clearly perpetrated to draw Night Thrasher out to get his revenge. And Night Thrasher shows up, and while Night Thrasher and Midnight's Fire are fighting, Firestar and Marvel Boy, they want to help him out, and Namorita stops him and said, this is between them. We should only step in if it's absolutely unavoidable. Otherwise, it has to be his fight. And Night Thrasher is getting pretty, at first is getting pretty beat up. He tries to block a punch with his skateboard, and Midnight's Fire cracks right through it into Night Thrasher's face and busts his visor on his helmet. But eventually, he does end up getting the upper hand and draws a cord, like a choke cord, around Midnight's Fire's neck. And he's got it twisted there, and technically he could whip his hands to either side and cut his throat. But he just holds him in that position when Silhouette shows up. It turns out she's still alive. She's just crippled, like she's walking. She's got braces on her legs, and she's walking with crutches. And that's when a bunch of Midnight's Fire's gang members show up on the nearby rooftops, and they have AIM weaponry. So Midnight Fire's made a deal with AIM, and where they're supposed to be protecting the community, and that's why the community is in that area of the city, is put up with them they threaten to fire into the crowd to get Night Thrasher to release Midnight's Fire. So that causes the crowd to turn on them, and Midnight's Fire instructs them to fire at the new warriors, not the crowd. So the new warriors then, go into battle against the gang members with the AIM weaponry, and Night Thrasher and Midnight's Fire resume their battle, and just as Midnight's Fire is about to take out Night Thrasher, he gets hit in the head with a bottle that somebody in the crowd threw, and that gives Night Thrasher the opportunity to recover and get the upper hand in the battle. And again, there's a situation where Night Thrasher has Midnight's Fire at his mercy. He's got a blade that comes out of his glove to his throat, and having found out about what her brother has done, Silhouette disowns him as a family member, claims he's forsaken his honor. And while the rest of the team watches nervously, instead of killing Midnight's Fire, he gives him a scar to match his own and tells him, we're so much alike, we could have even been brothers, but now, whenever you look in the mirror, you'll see a reflection of me, and you'll be reminded by the scar of me. So it ends kind of ominously when Nova asks, would you have killed him if we didn't stop you? And Night Thrasher only says, yes, no, you decide. And Nova tells him it's not good enough, but it's as good as he's going to get. And that completes issue 2. Of New Warriors.
First appearance of Silhouette, if you're into first appearances.
Oh, was it?
Cool. Yeah.
It's an interesting character.
Yeah, I remember her. She's got the brace, the arm braces. She became a member at one time.
Oh, that's right. She does end up joining the group.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Because I, like I said, I have some more issues, and you know, I still like it. They at this time was when they had would have the headshots in the corner on the Marvel label, mm-hmm. show you what characters were on the team inside. I always thought that was cool.
Cool deal. Well, I got the last book, and there's no AIM because I'm switching to DC. Really good story. I picked up and read Phantom Stranger number 2. It's a bizarre story because it's all over the place. But the only thing I hate about this showcase is the binding on this thing just sucks. I'm going to get some kind of glue or make it sticky again. Mm. So in Phantom Stranger number 2, this is called The Man Who Died 3 Times. And it's a bizarre story because it kind of goes into Phantom Stranger's story, and then it goes to a Dr. 13 story, and then concludes with Phantom Stranger again. But there's this son who's watching his dad, and he's like in a trance, and he watches his dad crash into a lamppost. And he thinks his dad died, and he's crying, and the Phantom Stranger is trying to console him because he shows up when he's dying. And then he shows back up at the parents' house, and he's alive. And he's every time he talks, it's kind of like he's not there. But he lives, and there's this strange totem that's in the room. But he watches – and then there's a backstory of why he's the way he is, and he's driving one night in the fog and shows up at this weird house, and this magic house that this one evil villain is in. And this guy is trying to make a sacrifice of this dude for some reason. Like if he sacrifices him in this house, he'll gain some occult power. And, Phantom Stranger stops that. And he actually, takes this dude out that's trying to gain immortality by sacrificing this poor kid's father. And after he defies that death in a flaming car, the newspaper even says, like, this man defied death in a flaming car. He jumps off a bridge to his death. And so that's his second death. And then he shows up again. And then you have this weird interruption, and then you go into this Dr. 13 type storyline of this immortal woman. And it's a weird story break. But this story sucked me in more than the first one because it features this Egyptian woman, Tatika. And she's supposedly immortal, and she could only be alive for like 30 days out of her sarcophagus or whatever that is. And it's like this one dude allows rich men to go see her, and she like entices these rich men like with her beauty and stuff, and it eventually leads to these guys' death. And Dr. 13 is the opposite of the Phantom Stranger. Like, the Phantom Stranger is a mystic and a powerful being of the occult. Dr. 13 is Mr. Skeptic, like, don't believe in any of this shit. Don't believe it. And he's got an assistant woman with him, and they're trying to break this Tatika, and he starts dating her, and sure enough, Dr. 13 gets sucked in, and he falls in love with her, and he tells his assistant, like, he even, like, fights with his assistant a little bit. Like, he goes from being skeptic to he's just obsessed with this woman. Like, he can't get enough of her. And but he still keeps part of his mind going, and you don't know if this Egyptian woman is really real. And she's picking on rich people because they like end up bringing her jewels and money and all this stuff. But Dr. 13 eventually wears gloves this one time. And it's like she's secreting this chemical that just makes them fall in love with her. and he uncovers that, and he breaks that that spell, and Mr. Skeptic, it's like Scooby-Doo mystery at the end of it. It's just weird how it's in the middle of the story. It's like, what the fuck? And then you go back to this Dr. 13's also in this story with the Phantom Stranger about his father dying, and Dr. 13's telling the son, is your father is not really dying three times. He's not. Something else is going on. And it turns out like he's almost going to die by this big statue falling on top of him as they're announcing the Hatton Construction Company, which he works for. They're revealing this huge statue, and it almost falls on him, but the Phantom Stranger pushes him out of the way and he survives. Well, it turns out this guy is being blackmailed by these goons, like kind of like a Soprano type goons, to build materials, like build buildings and stuff with the cheapest materials that'll fall apart, and then they'll split money 50-50. And he fell into this thing, and they had this guy hypnotize him to doing so, and that's what that scheme is. But the Phantom Stranger ends up taking out the goons, and the father's back to normal, and he's back to making his construction company reputable again. But it's a good it was so entertaining just for its bizarre. I like don't know what the hell happened or why they decided to switch stories like that, or what they even had to do with each other. Yeah. You had one guy that was couldn't die, or had 9 lives, and then this one girl that was immortal, and it's just weird. It's such a weird title. Like, I got sucked into the back issue magazine story about Dr. 13, and I was like, man, this is stuff I want to read. Because it even sounded bizarre in the article, and they were just saying this character is so freaking weird the way they wrote him. And to have a mystical being and the skeptic be his so prominent in the book, it's just bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Very
entertaining. Yeah, that is strange.
I should say who the creative team was. Let me find out who it is. Phantom Stranger. Damn it. Gotta be gentle with this book because I don't want it to fall apart. The artist is Bill Drott and the writer is Friedrich, I believe. That Friedrich guy is very good. I like his writing style.
Cool. Well, I have one more that I'll just do real quick.
Okay.
Because I'm still doing the Millennium. And I read issue 4. And, I mean, I'm enjoying it. I don't feel, like, compelled to, you know, just blow through the series and finish it up really quick or anything like that. So it's not, I'm not enthralled with it.
Is this number 3 or 4?
4.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, it's pretty easy to follow considering this had a ton of tie-ins and I'm not reading those. So there's stuff that's happening off page, but I'm still able to follow it. Like in between this and the last issue, Firestorm and Booster Gold have seemingly been taken over to the Manhunter side, stuff like that. But the main gist of this issue is Batman is lurking in the background, suspicious of everything that's going on, and he follows some, like, what else is new, but he follows some hints that lead him down to the headquarters of the Suicide Squad, and it's Warden Economos rather than Amanda Waller that sends them, has just sent the Suicide Squad out prior to Batman arriving to defend their base because the Manhunters are approaching. And so the guy lies straight to Batman's face, but and even though it scares the hell out of him, the warden that is, but Batman leaves and we can tell from his thoughts that he caught on to the guy lying very easily, and he noticed that there was a requisition for a boat underneath his hand, and he's suspicious of a prison needing a boat. And there's another major scene with Madame Xanadu where a guy comes in to have his fortune read, and he's actually interested in stealing a Manhunter mask that she has, and then he rushes upstairs to an office, which turns out to be that of Jim Corrigan. So I didn't realize that they lived in the same apartment building at this point, but the Spectre shows up, and so they Spectre uses powers to trace the man that was there, and puts his hand on the tarot cards that Xanadu had read the guy's fortune with, and his other hand on a globe, and he's able to pinpoint activity in the Bayou of New Orleans. So Spectre and Corrigan are headed that way. And we check in with Harbinger. She is trapped by the Harbingers, trapped by the Manhunters, and she thinks that she's being released, but they only release her to have an opportunity to hunt her down, and she is not able to escape. So when the issue ends, there's a whole bunch of people going places. The last page is actually a 4-panel page, and it shows Batman in a boat heading off in the direction of where the Suicide Squad are pursuing the Manhunters. It shows a Suicide Squad in a boat in the same swamps in their pursuit. And then it shows Captain Atom, who has been sent after Firestorm earlier in the issue. Shows him flying on his way. And then it shows Jim Corrigan with the Spectre behind him heading toward the swamps as well. So, yeah, like I said, I mean, I enjoy the issue when I read it, but I found myself feeling fairly content to just like read them as I have been, an issue every other week or here and there kind of thing has been working for me.
It's not losing any momentum.
No, not really. Okay. You know, I don't know if I'll keep reading it this slow. Maybe I'll do 2 at a time or something, but it's been pretty good though. As I've mentioned a number of times, I think it's partially because I like the era, you know, and there was actually a neat thing, an editorial on the back of this issue that was a little interesting to read, just all about how the series came together, how they chose Englehart as the writer and Staton as the penciler, and how, you know, it's pretty obvious to us now, but I like that it started with when the powers that be at DC decided, after the success of both Crisis on Infinite Earths and Legends, to make company-wide crossovers a new summer tradition. And years later, that made me sort of roll my eyes a little bit.
Right.
Like, oh, that's where it all started.
It sells.
Yep. They'll do what works. That's well, it's like what I always
say.
Sold
me on Quasar.
Yep. People complain. It's like they're not going to do it if it doesn't sell.
Yeah.
So if it sells, either it's just not for you and other people like it, or you're buying it and complaining. And you should just not buy it.
That's right.
Words to the wise, energize.
All right. Well, I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. That'll work.
Geek Brunch Retrocast. God, I don't remember what ish episode.
This time I actually know for once. It's 29.
29. And you can follow us at the Geek Brunch Podcast.com. And we are at Twitter at MythMakingETC. That's for Chris. And for me, I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. And let's see, we got a Facebook page at Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button. And what else we got? sounds like farts. Do you have gas?
No, Pumbaa does.
Ah.
You know Pumbaa from The Lion King?
Oh, yeah. You're playing with Pumbaa?
I guess Pumbaa that if you squeeze him, it farts.
On purpose? Like it's designed to fart?
Uh-huh. That's what it's designed to do.
Does he fart in the TV, in the cartoon?
Yeah, in the movie, that's one of the jokes is that he has gas. Pretty funny.
I never seen The Lion King.
So I was thinking if you keep having trouble with Keith showing up for DC Noise, I can mail this to you.
And that'll get him so interested again?
No, you can just, it'll be, it'll be you, Daryl, and Pumbaa, and you can just...
Oh, then people won't notice.
You'll have the farting.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep.
It's like... do you want to plug your other podcast?
Mythmaking, etc. You can find it at mythmakingetc.com or go to criticalmassesmedia.com. That's a site that I started with couple of my college friends. And these days, it's mostly just my podcasts and then like music reviews that my friend does. It kind of varies in the amount of stuff that goes up depending on how busy we are, but... Yeah, I mean, you could check that out. This most recent episode is about Master of Kung Fu issue. I think it's 85, something like that. And I think what I'm going to do is for a little while, it's going to be bi-weekly. And then I may be switching it to a monthly show where I talk to different podcasters about old comics and maybe do like a brief little interview about them as a comic collector and stuff. So still working out details, maybe doing that. And if I start that format, probably be in a month or two. So yeah.
Cool deal.
Gonna try to keep something going with the name Mythmaking, etc. that's related to comics, but just trying to change it up and maybe make it a little more interesting for myself. So
keep it fresh.
Keep it fresh. That's what she said.
Yeah. So I think that's it. And please leave an iTunes review. Go to Geek Brunch Podcast on iTunes. Search for that, Geek Brunch, and at the iTunes store. And then you could leave a review and say it's specifically for Geek Brunch Retrocast. And you could follow Geek Brunch, which is with my other brothers, and DC Noise, and I sometimes show up on the Valiant podcast, which is a lot of fun. I like that one because I learn a lot from it. In other words, they see things that I didn't, and I point out things that maybe they didn't see. So it's pretty cool. Discussion on Valiant Comics. I think that's it. And have a good Sunday. What's left of it.
Yeah, you too.
Drink some caffeine.
I think I'm done for the day. Switch to water.
All right. I'll talk to you later. All right. Bye.
Later. Bye.
Oscar-winning rabbit, Bugs Bunny.
And also starring my fast-feathered friend, the Roadrunner.
Roadrunner. Meep, meep. The child is after. Roadrunner. Meep, meep. If he catches you, you're through. Roadrunner.
Meep, meep.
The child is after you. Roadrunner. If he catches you, you're through. The child is really a crazy clown.
Meep, meep.
When will he learn that he never can slow him down? Beep, beep. Poor little Roadrunner never bothers anyone. party is having fun.
The Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Hour.